Welcome back, everybody. Today we're doing a deep dive into a condition that I think a lot of people have heard of, but I don't know how much people actually really understand fibromyalgia.
Yeah, it's definitely a complex one.
So to help us unravel it all, we're going to be looking at research from Maite Skirogordabil, a psychology professor.
At the University of the Basque Country.
Exactly. And her work really dives into the psychological and social aspects of fibromyalgia, which is something I think we need to hear a lot more about.
For sure. I mean, it's so much more than just the physical pain, you know?
Right. So before we get too far, let's just make sure we're all on the same page. What exactly are we talking about when we say fibromyalgia? What are the main symptoms?
So the kind of the core features are going to be widespread musculoskeletal pain. So, you know, pain in your muscles and joints, pretty much all of your body. And then fatigue, like just crushing fatigue.
Oh, gosh.
And often sleep problems. And then on top of that, you get what's called fibrofog, which is basically cognitive difficulty. So difficulty thinking, clearly remembering things, focusing.
Oh, so it affects your brain, too. It's not just like aches and pains.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the whole package, unfortunately.
And I remember reading somewhere that getting diagnosed with this is a nightmare.
It can be. Skirogordabil's research actually shows that it takes, on average, 10 years.
10 years.
10 years for someone to get a diagnosis of fibromyalgia. That's a decade.
Wow.
Of, you know, tests and uncertainty and probably a lot of frustration trying to figure out what's going on.
Gosh, that's heartbreaking to think about.
Yeah.
Living with that for so long.
Yeah.
Not knowing.
Yeah, it really speaks to the resilience of people living with this condition.
Right, and kind of emphasizes why this research that we're talking about today is so important, because she's not just looking at the physical symptoms. She's really digging into that psychological and social impact.
Exactly. And that's where some of the really groundbreaking findings come in. She found that rates of anxiety and depression and other psychological symptoms are way higher in people with fibromyalgia than in the general population.
Okay. So it's not just a matter of, oh, I'm in pain. Of course, I'm depressed, or of course I'm anxious. It's something more than that.
Right. It seems to be more than just a reaction to chronic pain.
Right.
What's really interesting is that Skirogordabil found that most people with fibromyalgia didn't have pre-existing mental health conditions.
So you're saying these mental health struggles often develop after they get fibromyalgia?
Yeah, that's one of the key takeaways. It suggests that there's this link between the onset of fibromyalgia and the development of these psychological symptoms.
Okay, that is fascinating. And it completely reframes how we think about this condition. It's not just about, you know, treating the pain, but addressing the whole person, the mental, the emotional.
Exactly, and understanding how it affects all these different areas of life, relationships, work, finances. It's a big deal.
So let's get into that. What does her research tell us about those impacts on relationships, for example?
Well, it can be really tough. Imagine trying to explain this invisible illness to your friends and family who may not fully get it. There can be a lot of misunderstanding. And, you know, if you don't feel understood, you're not going to feel supported.
I can imagine that would be really hard.
Yeah. But there was a really interesting finding, too. Skirogordabil also found that partners of people with fibromyalgia often report increased feelings of unconditional love.
Oh, that's beautiful. So even amidst all the challenges, that bond can actually become stronger.
Yeah, it's a real testament to the power of empathy and partnership.
What about work? How does fibromyalgia affect someone's ability to hold down a job?
Well, unfortunately, people with fibromyalgia are much more likely to have to leave their jobs due to disability than the general population.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, if you're dealing with constant pain and fatigue and brain fog, it makes sense that it would be hard to keep up with the demands of a job.
Yeah. And of course, that leads to financial strain. You know, medical bills pile up, income goes down.
Right. It's this whole ripple effect of challenges.
Exactly.
So we really can't talk about the physical and psychological impact without acknowledging those economic consequences, too.
Yeah. It highlights the need for comprehensive support systems that address all these different aspects of the condition.
Now, Professor Skirogordabil's research doesn't just highlight the challenges. She's also explored some potential treatment options, and specifically, she's looked at cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, for fibromyalgia.
And the findings there are pretty encouraging.
Before we get into the results, can you just give us like a really quick overview of CBT? What is it exactly?
Sure. So CBT is a type of therapy that helps people identify and change those negative thought patterns and behaviors that are contributing to their distress.
So instead of just kind of getting stuck in those negative cycles, it gives you tools to reframe your thinking and develop healthier coping strategies.
Yeah.
And with a chronic condition like fibromyalgia, that could be really helpful, I imagine.
Absolutely.
You know, what I found really interesting is that Gerrit Gortabiel actually looked at two different types of CBT for fibromyalgia. She looked at individual therapy with biofeedback and group therapy without biofeedback.
Yeah, that's a really interesting comparison.
So, can you explain that biofeedback piece a little bit? Because I feel like that always sounds kind of futuristic to me.
It's actually not that complicated. It, right. It basically uses sensors to measure things like, you know, muscle tension, your heart rate, your skin temperature.
Right.
And then it displays that information on a screen so you can actually see how your body's responding to stress or pain.
Oh, wow. So you can literally see your body reacting in real time.
Yeah, exactly. And by seeing it, you can then start to learn techniques to consciously control those physiological responses.
That's incredible. It's like taking control of your own internal systems.
It's very empowering.
So what did Professor Gerrit Gortabiel's research tell us about how well these two approaches worked for people with fibromyalgia?
Well, both types of therapy, the individual with biofeedback and the group without, they both led to significant improvements in a few key areas. People saw reductions in their anxiety and their depression. They had better anger management and their overall stress levels were lower.
So regardless of whether they had the biofeedback or not, people were seeing benefits.
Exactly. And that's really encouraging. I think it shows that, you know, psychological therapies can be a really valuable tool in treating fibromyalgia. It's not just about masking the pain. It's about giving people the tools to cope better mentally and emotionally.
It's so empowering to know that there are treatments out there that can address not just the physical pain, but the emotional and mental toll as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, Gerrit Gortabiel's work kind of takes it a step further and challenges some of those harmful stereotypes that are associated with fibromyalgia.
You're talking about that misconception that people with fibromyalgia are exaggerating their symptoms or just seeking attention.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That idea has been around for way too long, and it's incredibly damaging and invalidating for people who are suffering.
It probably makes it that much harder for people to get a proper diagnosis and treatment if doctors are dismissing their concerns, right?
Oh, absolutely. So Gerrit Gortabiel actually addressed this directly in her research.
Oh, that's great. What did she find?
Well, her study found no evidence of bias or any tendency for people with fibromyalgia to kind of present themselves in a worse light than they actually are.
So there's no basis for that claim that they're exaggerating or being dramatic.
Nope, not at all. Her research really supports the validity of these persons' experiences and pushes back against those negative stereotypes.
That's a huge win for people with fibromyalgia. To have research backing up their lived experience and debunking those myths is so important.
Absolutely. It's a vital step towards, you know, better understanding and diagnosis and treatment for this condition.
You know, as we're talking, I keep thinking back to that statistic about the average time to diagnosis being 10 years.
Yeah.
It's just mind-blowing. Imagine living with that level of uncertainty for a decade, going from doctor to doctor.
It's a stark reminder that we need more awareness, not just among healthcare professionals, but among the general public as well.
And during those 10 years, you know, they're probably undergoing countless tests and maybe even receiving a bunch of misdiagnoses before they finally get the right one.
Yeah, absolutely. The research actually points to an average of 9 tests and 4 misdiagnoses before they get that definitive diagnosis of fibromyalgia.
Oh my gosh, that's just adding insult to injury. You know?
Yeah, it really underscores the need for, you know, more timely diagnosis and intervention to help improve people's quality of life.
And it also kind of speaks to the progressive nature of this condition too, right? Mm-hmm. Because Gerrit Gortabiel also found that the number of symptoms people experience with fibromyalgia actually tends to increase over time.
That's right. It's not a static condition. It's something that can evolve and become even more challenging as time goes on.
Wow. So we really can't just focus on the physical symptoms
we
have to consider that psychological and social impact as well.
Exactly. And we also can't forget about the economic burden that fibromyalgia places on individuals and families.
Right. We talked about the higher rates of disability and unemployment, and that inevitably leads to financial strain.
And then you've got the cost of ongoing medical care medications, maybe alternative therapies. It adds up quickly.
Yeah. It's definitely another area where we need more support and resources for these individuals.
For sure.
You know, amidst all the challenges, one of the things I found really hopeful in Professor Gerrit Gortabiel's work was her emphasis on the importance of a positive outlook and coping strategies.
Oh, that's so important. You know, despite the difficulties, people with fibromyalgia can find ways to manage their symptoms and live fulfilling lives.
Right. It's not a life sentence.
No, not at all.
She found that a lot of individuals with fibromyalgia engage in activities like walking, swimming, yoga, and they get a lot of satisfaction out of those things.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, not only do those activities have physical benefits, but they can also provide a sense of community and social connection, which are so important for mental well-being.
And she also highlights coping strategies like positive thinking and visualization and setting small, achievable goals.
Right. It's about staying proactive and taking control where you can.
It's that sense of agency, even in the face of this chronic, often unpredictable condition. It's a reminder that even though fibromyalgia can be so challenging, there are still ways to cultivate hope and resilience and find joy in life.
And that's a message that we need to spread.
For sure. We've covered a lot of ground today in our deep dive into the world of fibromyalgia research,
We have.
particularly focusing on the really insightful work of Professor Gerard Gordabil. As we wrap up, I'd like to ask you this. If someone you knew was just diagnosed with fibromyalgia, how would you use these insights from Professor Gerard Gordabil's research to create a really supportive environment for them? What would that look like in a practical sense?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think first and foremost, it's about acknowledging that this is a journey. You know, it's not just a one-time event, and remembering that fibromyalgia affects not just the body, but the mind, emotions, relationships, like we've been talking about. It really touches every aspect of person's life.
And even if we can't fully understand what they're going through, I think just validating their experience is so important.
Oh, absolutely. It's about offering genuine empathy. You know, listening without judgment and finding practical ways to support them. Maybe that's helping with errands when they're having a flare-up, or just being there to listen when they need to vent.
Just recognizing that their pain is real, even if we can't see it.
Exactly. And remembering that the impact goes way beyond the physical symptoms. You know, Professor Gerard Gordabil's research really drives that point home.
And, you know, when we think about those 10 years that it often takes to get a diagnosis, you know, it makes you wonder how much suffering could be avoided if there was earlier intervention.
Absolutely. That's why raising awareness is so crucial, you know, not just among doctors, but within families, communities, workplaces. The more we understand about fibromyalgia, the better equipped we are to support those who are living with it.
And speaking of support, you know, Professor Gerard Gordabil's research on treatment options, specifically the findings on CBT, are really promising.
Yeah, it's exciting to see such positive results with CBT, both in the individual and group settings. It really reinforces the idea that we can empower people with fibromyalgia to manage their symptoms and improve their quality of life.
I'm curious, what do you think it is about CBT that makes it so effective? Is it something inherent to the techniques themselves, or could it be that sense of community and shared experience that's fostered in a group therapy setting?
That's a great question. I honestly think it's probably a combination of both. You know, the techniques themselves do provide valuable coping mechanisms, but that support and validation that you receive from others who really understand what you're going through can be so powerful.
It's like you're not alone in this.
Exactly. And that sense of community can be so vital in combating the isolation and the stigma that often come with chronic illnesses.
And we can't forget that Professor Gerard Gordabil's work also really helped to debunk that harmful stereotype of the, you know, the difficult patient. Her research showed no evidence of bias or exaggeration.
Yeah, it's a powerful reminder that we need to believe people when they tell us that they're hurting. Their experiences are valid and their struggles deserve our compassion and support.
Well said. So as we wrap up this deep dive into the world of fibromyalgia research, and particularly the insightful work of Professor Gerard Gordabil, I want to leave our listeners with this thought. Imagine you were designing a support system for someone newly diagnosed with fibromyalgia. How would you incorporate the insights that we've talked about today to provide that truly holistic care?
That's a powerful question and one that's worth really thinking about. Because ultimately, you know, fibromyalgia is a journey, not a destination. And with the right support, understanding, and treatment, it's a journey that can be navigated with resilience, hope, and even moments of joy.
Thank you so much for joining us for this incredibly insightful deep dive. And until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep asking those thought-provoking questions.